The partisan gap between Americans today is one of the most significant in the last century. We feel that, and a Pew study recently confirmed that the country's political divisions have widened on most issues since President Trump took office. We often hear younger people say, boy, it's never been worse. Well, our next guests argue 50 years ago, 1968, it was. Let's get a look back with Brian Ballow and Nathan Connolly, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Brian, you there?
I'm here. Glad to be here, Robin.
Great to have you. Nathan?
Yes, yes.
Welcome to you as well. And Nathan, right. Why don't you start? Of course, the most divided moment in the nation's history, the Civil War, but in the 20th century, 1968 just stands out. Why?
Well, 1968 is one where so many sharp divides are heightened, in some cases in quite mortal fashion. In April of this year, we will mark the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King, which is on April 4th. And King, who is known now as a figure to unify around for all kinds of reasons in terms of the American values that he embodied, was during his lifetime extraordinarily polarizing. Mm-hmm. By the time he was assassinated in 68, he had already been a very vocal critic of the Vietnam War for over a year. He had tried to marshal and really shift the emphasis of the civil rights struggle from one focus almost exclusively on voting and public accommodations to a really hard focus on poverty. And it was also really important to bear in mind that there was a referendum in many people's minds about the efficacy of nonviolent direct action. And so to have King get assassinated in April of 68 was a signal for many that nonviolent direct action was an ineffective political strategy.
Yeah, and then we saw riots.
That's right. I mean, what's so important about the riots, of course, is that they really were a response to obviously a deep and prolonged poverty. King's own efforts in April 22nd of that year before he was killed was to try to bring about a poor people's campaign. But once he was killed and the riots that broke out immediately in the wake of his killing really did sharpen the sentiment about law and order approaches to the problem of poverty, to the problem of segregation. And you had candidates in 68 like Richard Nixon and George Wallace campaigning quite strongly on a law and order approach. I mean, 125 cities erupted in violence after King's assassination, and so it became very difficult for people to make an argument that they didn't need to have some kind of police response to that unrest. But again, the economic questions that King and so many others for decades had tried to foreground really did get swept under the rug in favor of an emphasis on policing almost exclusively.
Let's listen to a little of Richard Nixon, an ad that year.
Dissent is a necessary ingredient of change. But in a system of government that provides for peaceful change, there is no cause that justifies resort to violence. Let us recognize that the first civil right of every American is to be free from domestic violence. So I pledge to you, we shall have order in the United States.
So there you have that law and order call. And Brian, now that we've moved to, this is a presidential election year, you have King assassinated, but just a few months later in June in the primaries, you have Robert Kennedy assassinated. I mean, this was a blood-soaked year.
Totally. And Kennedy, for those of our listeners who are younger, I would compare Kennedy in some ways to Bernie Sanders in terms of his supporters, anyway. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He right. was the darling of younger, really committed, to the left people. And Kennedy waded into black neighborhoods with his shirt sleeves rolled up, shaking the hands of whites and blacks. He was the antithesis of George Wallace, who mm-hmm. was running as the governor of Alabama, segregation now, segregation forever. He had said a few years earlier he was a racist. And he had great appeal, not just in the South, but in a lot of northern neighborhoods as well.
Imagine, you know, a presidential candidate and one who's got a groundswell, you know, being cut down, a civil rights icon being cut down.
Right.
And the other theme under all of this is the war in Vietnam at this point. And again, it's hard to imagine. We've had thousands, you know, fighting wars for years in the U.S. now. And that is, you know, really quite something to pay attention to, but the U.S. had 500,000 troops in Vietnam.
That's right. And they had escalated very quickly. Just a few years earlier, the numbers were much smaller. And that term, the credibility gap that was applied to Lyndon Johnson. That was because of the Vietnam War. That was because Johnson wasn't being straight with the American people. And there was an event in, well, the end of January in 68, and it continued into February, the Tet Offensive. North Vietnamese troops, Viet Cong, actually entered Saigon. People were watching news reports. They could see the explosions in the background. It was very ironic, Robin, because most military experts will say we won the Tet Offensive. The North lost more soldiers than we did. In strict military terms, we won. But those visuals coming into the living rooms of Americans made it crystal clear that what Johnson was saying about the war was simply not true.
Nathan Connolly, talk about some of those images that came back. The photo of a South Vietnamese chief of the National Police executing a prisoner point blank. I mean,
well, that's right. I mean, the idea that people can conduct kind of ethical wars was utterly shattered in the theaters of Vietnam, right? Images of people being assassinated on the street, images of young children whose, you know, skin is basically being peeled off by napalm. I mean, there's a whole range of images of whole villages simply being, you know, scorched earth, right? And the difficulty of maintaining any kind of support for the war in Vietnam really does begin to evaporate again with Tet in 68, but then also upon the revelations of the My Lai massacre, which happened in 68 by American troops, where 500 unarmed men, women, and children in South Vietnam are killed. And initial reports around this made it sound absolutely like your typical courageous firefight. And as the truth begins to come out, even after an attempted cover-up from certain members of the military, people are talking in very concrete terms about America as an instrument of empire and imperialism and really being quite brutal. And again, as we mark a half century from that, a whole host of questions are going to continue to come up about America's involvement in, you know, foreign theaters.
Brian Ballow, talk about another event. This is in September. The Miss America pageant protests in Atlantic City.
Well, it's easy to laugh about this, but in fact, the protests by feminists, women who were determined that women should have equal rights, protested what had been a very iconic moment in American cultural history, Miss America. And these women protested the fact that these women were just appreciated for their looks. They were treated like it was some kind of meat market. And in fact, these protesters anointed a sheep, Miss America, to underscore the meat market element of all of this. And, you know, when we think about the hashtag Me Too movement today, women finding other women through social media, well, there wasn't social media. But there was a kind of a sense of, yeah, wait a second, I want to think about gender relations in different terms that swept through American society. And it really was a ground up social and cultural movement.
And we really come to a peak a few years later, the women's movement and the changes it wrought. You know, some companies had to, for instance, you know, hire women in order to keep their licensing. I mean, it really began to have an impact after that. Just want to ask you both, we started with this Pew study that found that the country's political divisions have really widened. And people do think this is the worst time ever. And as you're laying out, assassinations, half a million Americans at war. I mean, all the things that were happening in this incredible year that you've picked. But talk just briefly about how it divided families. There were people, you know, children who didn't speak to parents, parents who disowned children. I mean, it was
absolutely. It was called the generation gap. Another motto was that don't trust anybody over 30. I used to say that until I turned 29. It is hard to convey how socially divided the country is. Things like long hair, for instance, were markers that simply don't exist today. That marked you as being a hippie or being a person of the left. On the other hand, people were not divided as much in partisan terms. And so when you talked about the partisan divide, you really hit the nail on the head, Robin. Remember, that conservative racist was a Democrat, George Wallace.
In the South.
Remember,
right.
The Democrats still controlled the, quote, solid South. So the country wasn't lined up along partisan lines the way it is today. And that's one of the real big differences between then and today.
Yeah. I would actually go so far as to say, too, that so much of what becomes the later political divides actually occur in direct response to narratives and beliefs about what the 60s meant for people, right? You think of somebody like Ronald Reagan. You think of somebody like Bill Clinton. These are people who fashion their entire public selves relative to what they did or didn't do in the late 1960s, right? Reagan relative to being governor of California. Clinton as somebody who was part of the kind of counterculture of the late 60s, right? There's always attacking against
inhale.
The 60s.
He did not inhale Nathan.
That's right. But now we really are in a post-60s political moment where Barack Obama, for instance, the previous president, was one of the first presidential figures on the national stage and candidates to really be completely disentangled from the legacies and the concerns around the 60s. And we really are now in a post-60s politics in so many respects.
Well, and it's been pointed out that the alt-right or right-wing media was a direct outgrowth of the 60s and some people getting together and saying, we're never again going to let one media organ, and it was the Washington Post, break a story the way they did about the Nixon administration and everything that came from that. So some of the division we are seeing today, definitely the seeds were planted then.
Absolutely.
Brian Ballow and Nathan Connolly, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Brian, Nathan, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Robin.